This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Stress. It's in all our lives. Sometimes it can be a positive force, motivating us to perform well, but often, like when you're stuck in traffic with nowhere to go, it can be quite a negative force. And if you experience stress over a prolonged period of time, it could become chronic, with significant consequences to your health. Well, joining me with more on this and what can be done to reduce these harmful effects is Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Bakke. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So we know that stress is necessary for life, but high levels and especially prolonged stress can really lead to some very serious health consequences. I want you to tell us about that, but first, help us understand what is happening in the body when you're under stress.
Well, I think many of us have heard of the fight or flight mechanism, which is, you know, when you're under stress, you release certain hormones and your endocrine system really kind of revs up. It's really saying something's about to really happen and I need to protect this person. And so all of that at a short period of time is okay because it might help you. If you see somebody stuck and you need to lift something heavy, it might help you actually do that. Or if you need to run away from danger, it'll help you run faster than maybe you normally would have been able to. But over prolonged periods of time, if your body is constantly in that state with all of those hormones and cortisol in particular up, it can damage some of your organ systems and cause you to have problems.
So things that happen during that period is like your heart rate will go up, your blood pressure will increase, and it boosts your energy so you can meet the challenge. But as you said, if you stay in that hyper state of activation, it has serious consequences. What about the kinds of things that can happen? In other words, I mean, I've heard of things, people actually having a fatal heart attack under a circumstance like that.
Yes, you can have a heart attack. You could have potentially a stroke. You could, you know, just faint, you know, because you're so anxious. So really people, you know, need to understand that although it's good, it can sometimes, if your blood pressure continues to be high and goes unchecked, you know, if you have palpitations and they can't, and it's constant, it's going to cause other problems.
So basically, and the problem is obviously in the moment, if it's a large enough stressor and there are underlying problems, you could have sudden death. But that isn't what commonly happens in the moment, in the short term.
In the moment, sometimes people might get sweaty, the hands will get clammy, they'll get sweaty, they'll feel a pain in their chest or like their heart is beating very quickly. They may shake or get nervous.
Stomach aches, headaches.
Stomach aches, you know. So those are things that a lot of times people recognize if somebody has to go give a big speech, they may feel like something's in the pit of their stomach or they may feel their heart racing. And as soon as they start, everything relaxes.
But now if we talk about it, you know, in terms of the being a chronic problem, what are the kinds of ramifications or diseases that literally can be fed by this kind of chronic stress?
Well, certainly chronic stress can cause heart disease. High blood pressure to begin with, and that can eventually affect other parts of your heart. Depending on how you react to the stress, so if you use alcohol to relax, if you constantly are drinking alcohol, that could have negative effects on your health. It could affect your sleep. You may not be sleeping well, waking up in the middle of the night always worried or just even anxious and don't know why you're anxious.
Relying on smoking, perhaps, or food.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, it can lead to obesity because some people under stress will eat more than they normally will. And if it's constant and they're using that as a mechanism to relieve their stress, just like someone might use alcohol, it could lead to obesity.
And all of those other things, the obesity and also just the emotional strain of it lead to, as we said, depression, perhaps. And that has been shown to lead to higher levels of cardiovascular risk as well.
And, you know, people have to realize we often think that the stress leads you to be the anxious side of things. But at a chronic level, a lot of people will eventually become depressed. And so if you're feeling sad all the time, you may want to look back and see, is there something in your life that you've been trying to cope with? And at some point, you've gotten to the point where I can't cope with this anymore and now going the other way.
You feel hopeless at that point. And you're not geared up, but you're kind of like geared down, so to speak. So obviously there are things that can be done to manage the stress. And it seems like it has to start with, as you mentioned so well, identifying what's causing the stress. So how do people go about doing that? What do you recommend?
Well, I think if you feel like you don't know the cause of it, I think talking to somebody can sometimes help, because a different perspective, someone from the outside or who knows you well, may recognize something that's going on that you may not. I think that's one of the key ways to do it. If you need to, you can go seek help, talk to a professional help, to try and talk through things. But that is one of the keys. Even if you can't do anything about that, what it is, you could find ways to help deal with it in a healthier way.
Yeah, for example, if you're in a very high-stress job situation where you have a lot of demands but maybe not a lot of decision-making capability or ways of altering that, you're really in that kind of box of stress. But there may be ways of coping better with it,
right?
Either in terms of attitudinal change, and that really comes from working on it with perhaps someone else, as you said. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Donna Bakke. We're talking about managing stress to maintain your health. So what are some of the other things that are crucial in terms of helping to mitigate some of this stress? I mean, are relationships and building strong relationships a big part of it?
Clearly, people who have good, strong relationships have lower stress levels, because they this way, when they start to feel anxious or have a problem, they have someone they can talk to. A lot of times, if you're sitting there by yourself, you just rerun that program, you know, that problem over and over again, and really don't find any solutions for it. I think another key to managing stress, particularly if you're in a high-stress job, is find an exercise outlet. Exercise increases endorphins, which makes you feel better. So 20 to 30 minutes a day, even if it's getting up at work and walking around, going, and when it's nice out, go outside, you know, for a 5-minute walk around your building or around your parking lot might help you if you're in that high-stress job.
And also change your perspective maybe a little bit. I mean, if you're stuck in a particular space, just changing your location sometimes can actually change your perspective.
Yes, and I think the other thing is to eat a healthy diet, and particularly if you can, stay away from using alcohol as a means to relieve your stress, particularly if you're taking it at night, because that can interfere with your sleep cycle and you may be waking up in the middle of the night.
How about caffeine?
Caffeine is another one. You really should limit your caffeine intake, particularly, again, for sleeping after about 2 in the afternoon.
And also it would seem, if you're revved up to begin with, having that additional caffeine can really just add,
right,
you know, to the injury, so to speak. How about managing your time? Is that something that's realistic that people should try to get a handle on how they manage their time more, you know, more wisely?
I think it's critical to try and manage your time. And I think in this day and age, when we're constantly getting emails and tweets, I think sometimes if it's you just have an hour or two, or say a certain time after 7 o'clock at night, I'm not looking at anything.
I'm unplugged.
Might help you. Because if something comes in that's going to get you upset, then you may not sleep that night. So one of the ways to do that is to really make one of those rules. But also, looking, are there things in your lives that your life that you can do that you can give up, that it maybe isn't that important and you're just doing it for some other reason?
So also being able to say no, and that's really what you're saying, is to be able to pick and choose the things that are most essential, but also maybe some things. How about things that are gratifying, like making time for things like hobbies and things that are really give you something as opposed to take from you?
That's very important. Even if you can, volunteering sometimes will help. But I think there are some simple things you can do that we've learned about. And one is learning meditation. Even just taking 5 minutes at the beginning or end of your day to close your eyes and do some deep breathing might help slow you down. Yoga and yoga nidra, which is another more relaxing way of doing it. And they have plenty of tapes that you can buy or music you can get online that can help you do this.
So you can do it on your own. You don't necessarily need to join a class, join a gym, all of that. If there are resources to tap into where you can really find, if you can just find a little time and a headset and something to play a tape on, you can really get some help there.
Right.
How about things like hypnosis or Reiki, things of that nature. Have you found that those can really help?
There haven't been a lot of studies, but I know there have some people who've benefited from either hypnosis or Reiki. And again, it's another way of finding relaxation, of going internal to you. And it teaches you how to slow down your breath, slow down your heart, which is really the key to getting all those hormones that keep you ramped up, the key to getting them to slow down.
How difficult do you think it is, though, for someone who is in that state to learn something like meditation? I mean, do you think that a guided tape or something where you really kind of allowing someone to take you through is probably the better way to expose yourself to this, at least initially?
If you haven't done it initially, it is important, I think, to use some kind of guided meditation. There are plenty of apps out there that you can use. I use one, and it really helped me. Initially, I couldn't. I had all these thoughts in my head, but eventually, as you do it, you retrain your brain, and as soon as you hear that music or hear that tape, you automatically start slowing down.
Yeah, I've heard that from many people when you present them with the notion of trying to meditate or do something that's very quiet, they say, I can't sit still, or my brain keeps jumping around and there's no way I can do this. I mean, they resist feeling they can't. But if you do, as you said, use something that's already basically been prepared for you and give into it and do it repeatedly, you can develop better habits of mind.
Right, and no one should expect that the first time they use a tape that they're going to have no thoughts in their head. It doesn't work like that.
Not at all.
It takes a lot of time, sometimes a couple of months of constantly doing it to really retrain your brain to think that way. But then once you do, when those situations come up, you start reacting differently. You may not get as excitable as you might have gotten before because now your body's in a different situation,
a different state. It's interesting because I recently read an article about the human brain and how it's much more plastic than we ever thought, meaning we can continue to learn and the brain can continue to change throughout life into our much, much, much later years. And this idea of retraining your brain in a certain way to respond less maybe intensely or stressfully to things is something that really can be done if you're willing to put in a little time and effort.
And there are studies now, especially with yoga, on what the effect of yoga has been on not only your brain but also your relaxation system and your response to stress.
So overall, the reasons for all of this is so that you do maintain better health and you're not stressing your cardiovascular system and every other part of your body in effect with that kind of unnecessary stress. Before we go, one last thing, sleep. You know, in our crazy environment, this idea of being plugged in, as you mentioned, you know, 24/7 and the 24/7 news cycle and all that's going on in the world being so stressful, how much sleep is necessary, and what do you recommend really quickly to make sure you get enough?
7 to 8 hours of sleep consistently. Go to bed for adults. Go to bed the same time every night, whether it's during the week or on the weekend. And if you do that consistently, you will be a lot better off.
Thank you so very much. And as you said, if you really are still having a lot of trouble, a licensed health professional, someone to talk to, might really help as well. My guest has been Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks for coming in and sharing this very important information. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.